Everyone, how are we today? This meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order. The time is 10:05 on Thursday, March 8th. Members present are Representative Newman, Representative Christ Tompkins. We have Representative Eastman attending telephonically, and myself, Chair Stutes. We do have a quorum. This is a friendly reminder to silence your cell phones, please. And we are allowing the use of electronic devices. And we have Representative Tarr joining us. And we are asking that staff and members of the audience not approach the table. If you need to pass a note to a committee member, please get the attention of my committee aide, Matt Greening. I'd like to thank Brian Glynn, the Fisheries Committee Secretary, and Madison Truitt from the Juno LIO for technical and teleconferencing support. Today, the Fisheries Committee will be holding confirmation hearings for appointees to the CFEC and the Fishermen's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council. The appointees for the CFEC are Fate Vance Putnam and Dale Kelly. The lone appointee we have for the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council is Mark Saldi. I would note that during our last hearing on the CFEC bill, House Bill 231, this past Tuesday, both commissioners were here to answer questions on that bill and were asked many general questions about the CFEC. Members of the public may want to watch that portion of the hearing on BASIS or Ledge TV. Fate was appointed by the governor on December 1st of last year and was reappointed to a different seat on January 29th of this year. If confirmed, his term would expire March 1st, 2021. Fate, if you would come forward and join us at the table and identify yourself and your affiliation for the record. I'd like you to tell us a little about yourself as well as your qualifications and experience. Please also touch on your interest and ability to increase efficiency within the CFEC and to work in an impartial manner on behalf of fishermen across the state. And members of this committee, please feel free to ask questions as we go along.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for the record, Fate Putman, Chair or Designee Commissioner for the CFEC, also appointed to the chairmanship of that commission last month. So a little bit about myself. I'll just run through this briefly for you. I was born in Fairbanks. My mom was a city planner. My dad was a plumber pipe fitter. My mom carried a briefcase. My dad carried a tool belt growing up. We moved to Anchorage after the earthquake in 1965. My mom was doing a lot of planning of villages and towns that got damaged in the earthquake, including Valdez and others. I attended Stellar and West High School in Anchorage, graduated in 1976. After that, I went to college at Linfield College in McMinnville, Oregon, and graduated from Western Washington University with a degree in environmental science. My first legislative job was in 1979 as a student intern. I worked for Senator Pat Rohde and had a job office right across the hall here. I returned to Juneau in law school. I was an intern in the Attorney General's office. I worked for Tom Custer. He was in charge of the Natural Resources section for the Attorney General. That was 1983. And so we worked on a number of things, including looking at the CFEC, Dinkum Sands, Navigable Waterways, Mental Health Trust Land, and a lot of other issues that I dealt with as an intern there. After that, I worked as a manager of the Commission on the Future of the Permanent Fund. I worked for Red Boucher, who was the chair of the State Affairs Committee at the time. Also serving on that commission, Jan Fakes, Terry Martin, Denny Kelso, Mark Langland, Hugh Malone, Steve Frank, and a lot of other people served on that commission. Our job was to go around the state and collect testimony about opinions of Alaskans about the Permanent Fund and its future. I know that's things you guys are struggling with today still. I was appointed to the Planning and Zoning Commission in Anchorage by then Mayor Tom Fink, and I served on that commission for a couple years. And then I became the in-house legal counsel, political director, lobbyist, and assistant executive director of a public employee union from 1995 to 2015. I retired from that, and for the past 2 years, I've been a contract lobbyist. I've changed my direction from that, and now I'm focused entirely on CFEC, which is obviously a full-time job, as I could explain to you in the questions that you're asking. And I'm also looking forward to serving on the commission. And I have a little bit of history in fishing. I want to go through that quickly for you so you have a general idea of my background in that area. I was a salmon hand troller in 1979 after I was the intern here. I also was a halibut longliner with my father in 1970 and through the 70s and 80s down in Homer, and also worked as a deckhand in winter fisheries in Homer in 84 and 85. And after that, I was a cash buyer in King Salmon for the Putman Fish Company, which was my brother's fish buying business, and unfortunately that ended with my brother's passing. But I'm a set net fisher on the Kenai Peninsula for the last 20 years. A lot of folks come and go through our fish camp every summer. It goes from June 15th to June 25th. I've never held a captain license or a limited entry permit, but since I was in the AG's office forward, I've always been interested in the CFEC, and now I have the opportunity to observe it from the inside. And I have a lot of other things I want to tell you about, but maybe I'll stop there and see if there's any questions about my background.
About your background? No, but I do have a question.
Sure.
So can you tell us a little bit about, it says here that you were appointed in December.
Yes.
By the governor. What has been your focus from that time to the present in relation to the CFEC?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, yes, I was appointed in December 1st to replace Ben Brown, who resigned from his seat, so I had a one-year appointment initially. And some of the things that, you know, the first thing I did, of course, was read the Lawson Report and the two legislative audits that were done in this agency to determine what other people thought was going on. And then I got into the structure of the agency to determine the outstanding cases that are still pending before the commission. So those, we've talked about them in this other hearing, but the 13 cases that are still left, we're looking at those now. And with the assistance of the Attorney General, they're our lawyer counsel. I happen to be a lawyer, but you don't have to be a lawyer to be on this commission. We use the Attorney General for those things. And so we are taking to heart the things that were said in those audits and reports and making changes to the commission. We've come up with 20 different things that we're doing internally to make the commission more efficient. I could go through those if you'd like now, or maybe come back at another time.
We might have to have you come back at another time because we are going to have to conclude today's hearings by 11:40. Okay. But so you said there are 13 pending cases. You came in on December 1st.
Yes.
When you came in on December 1st, were there 13 pending cases?
Well, so I would put these in two different categories. There were about 18 or 19 actual cases from the year before dealing with emergency transfers and permanent transfers, which were denied initially by the licensing staff and then were appealed to the hearing officer and eventually to the commission. So I dealt with those 18 cases initially within the first couple of months on the commission, and then there were two cases that were referred back from the Superior Court, remanded back to our commission for reconsideration, so we dealt with those two as well. So we've dealt with all those cases. The 13 cases that I refer to are cases that are pending from 35 and 45 years ago on different fisheries, and we're trying to close out those cases to eliminate the interim use permits that those people are fishing on now. So those are the cases we're looking at. Those will take much more time because they're much more complicated, but they have been adjudicated by our adjudication staff, and they are currently pending before the commission for consideration and have been for quite a while.
Thank you. Does this committee have any questions for Mr. Putnam? Representative Chris Tompkins?
No questions. I appreciated the information on Tuesday, I guess it was.
Thank you.
Of a preamble to the confirmation hearing.
Well, I'm pretty excited because like I said, we've got some new eyes on some new issues, and so we're looking forward to having, I'm sure there won't be a snafu, and we're looking forward to having the commissioners back to give us a much wider picture of the CFEC and their abilities, capabilities, their staffing, and their issues. So If there are no other questions, do you have any other comments?
Yeah, on that point, Madam Chair, we are preparing an annual report for the legislature. We intend to have that here to you in the next couple of weeks. That annual report will be will look quite different than annual reports you've seen in the past that have this will look more, it'll be much more like an executive summary. It'll be a 4 or 5 page report with attached appendixes to it. And if you're interested, we could come to your committee and present that annual report to you with a PowerPoint and explain the commission and what our plans are going forward at that time.
Well, I guess that's the beauty of being the chair. I most certainly am interested, and we most certainly will be having you back for that very thing.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So, seeing no other questions from this committee, Mr. Putnam, we thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. I'm going to take a brief at ease. Thank you. Let's see here. Now we will have Commissioner Designee Dale Kelly. Welcome, Ms. Kelly. Dale was appointed last week, March 1st, and if confirmed, her term would expire on March 1st, 2022. If you would identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, I would like for you to tell us a little bit about yourself as well as your qualifications and your experience. Please touch on your interest and ability to increase the efficiency of the CFEC and work in an impartial manner on behalf of fishermen across the state. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dale Kelly. As you've stated, I'm the recent appointee to the commission. This is my 1 week anniversary with CFEC. So I was not fortunate enough, like fate, to be born in Alaska, but I think my soul was. I've lived here more than half of my life, and my route to the state was pretty circuitous. I grew up surfing, riding rodeo, and rock climbing in California. My academic training spanned fishery science to aquaculture to pharmacy to paramedicine. I worked as a pharmacy technician in 3 states, and one of my most unique responsibilities was preparing drug packs for the space shuttle. I worked in surgery and on ambulances in downtown Houston, Texas, which probably helped toughen me up to be a commercial fishing deckhand. I've lived in the bush. I've been a fish culturist in Prince William Sound and Southeast. I helped rebuild steam turbines in Haines and Fairbanks. And whenever time allows, I enjoy fishing on a troller out of Craig. I have no financial tie to a fishing business. I am not a permit holder. I have been a commercial fishing deckhand, and if I was fortunate enough to be able to continue in that, I would do so without pay. For the past 3 decades, I've been executive director of a commercial fishing organization representing fishermen who fish in both federal and state waters. They are touched by federal, international, and state regulatory and statutory processes, so I've become extremely familiar with the many policies and rules and regulations and law that underpins all of our fisheries across Alaska. It's been a very interesting and informative ride from here. I am a supporter of all forms of fishing and have worked on behalf of all fishermen my entire career. Among my industry duties, I served for 12 years as a commissioner with the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission. I serve on the Pacific Salmon Commission, which is the commission that implements the U.S.-Canada Salmon Treaty. I chair the advisors, currently the U.S. advisors, for a 5-country international commission that deals with research and high seas interception, enforcement of high seas interception of anadromous fish stocks. Over the years, I've helped start and manage a number of blended state and national fishing organizations, and I've worked quite a bit in habitat and anything that affects fish, conservation of fish, management of fish, fishermen. I've done pretty much done it all, I think. With respect to CFEC, I've spent all my career at various times and stages working with CFEC staff on a variety of projects. I know enough about CFEC to know that I have a lot more to learn. When you talk about efficiencies within CFEC, I've been there a week, so I'm still kind of assessing where we're going. But I have seen, and I've paid a lot of attention to both of the audits that were done on the organization. asked many, many questions the last couple of years as we've been going through that process, had some idea of some of the things that needed to be tightened up. I applaud Commissioner Putman and staff for changes that they've already started to put into place and to implement. Some of those are in the initial stages, so I feel like it's a good time to be coming in, be part of that team, and tightening up just some basic staff issues within the organization, making sure that we're addressing some of the concerns that were outlined in the Lawson report. I support them wholeheartedly, and I think that there's going to be some good changes ahead. I find the staff to be extremely welcoming and productive, and it's a pretty happy crew. I'm really happy to report that, because we've heard a lot to the contrary. And one
You're
of my,
not happier than we are to hear it.
Well, and my goals coming in were pretty simple. As the outside looking in, I knew I had a lot to learn. So one was getting that staff morale built up. Two was helping to repolish up the CFEC public image, because they really have been a tremendous organization over the years. And then to find ways that they can really be of service to the fishing public and the communities and the state agencies. Are there ways that we could better improve? And I think that I have some ideas for that moving ahead. I won't belabor that now, and I need to work it out with my fellow commissioner anyway. But I think Fate and I bring some real complementary skills, and I'm very excited to work with him. I think it'll be a great team if we are appointed.
Thank you. I'm pretty excited, and it's like I said earlier, and I've said a couple times, it's going to be good for everybody to have new eyes on the issue. Sometimes when you're doing the same thing day after day after day after day, you can look past something that's right at your feet. So we're really, I think everybody's excited about the new horizon that the CFEC is going to be experiencing. And there's been some great groundwork laid by the previous commissioners.
Absolutely.
So are there any questions from this committee? Representative Christel?
Also appreciate the opportunity to have a little back and forth on Tuesday. Thank you, Dale. And also want to comment and commend your long, long history and service to commercial fishing, particularly in Southeast Alaska, and deep knowledge of the issues in industry, which I certainly know by reputation and firsthand experience, and getting texts from you when the King Salmon Opener is going on and wanting to know what the catch counts are on the boats. And so it's great to see the agency having this leadership going forward, and I'm glad you're willing to serve.
We really appreciate it. Before I let you leave the table, Representative Eastman, do you have any questions for Ms. Kelly? Cannot hear you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No questions this time.
Thank you. Ms. Kelly, thank you for your time, and we thank you for your willingness to serve for the state. Next up, we have an appointee for the Fisherman's Fund Advisory Appeals Council, Mark Saldi. Mark, he's calling in from Skagway. Mark is a long-standing member of the council. He has served since 2008 and with 2 5-year terms. He was reappointed last week on March 1st, and if confirmed, his third term would expire March 1st, 2023. Mark, if you would identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, I'd like for you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your past experience on the council.
Okay, hello, thank you for this opportunity. This year coming up will be my 40th year of fishing in Alaska. I've participated in quite a few fisheries from there in the past, from Queenstown to Southeast Alaska and out Chinook in Alaska Peninsula and stuff. And I moved to Alaska in 1979 after I graduated from college. I've got a degree in business administration from Colorado State, and I came to Alaska in 79, and I've been here ever since. And this will be my third term. I've been 10 years on this committee, and in the 10 years, I've never missed a meeting. I'm probably one of the only few that can say that. And I own 4 limited entry permits, and I have HALIBUT IFQ. and I live in Skagway, and just primarily now that I'm older, I just stay in Southeast Alaska and don't go out west anymore. And that's pretty much what's about me, and I don't know if you'd like me to talk about the fund at all.
And not unless you want to just give us a little information. We're kind of time restricted here, but please feel free.
Oh, okay. I can just do a quick little thing there. You know, you probably already know this anyways, but it was started in 1951 before statehood, and it's one of the few dedicated funds, if not the only dedicated fund in the state of Alaska. The state doesn't contribute any money to the fund. It's all fishermen funded, you know, through a percentage of deckhand licenses and limited entry permits. So we get checks from Fish and Game and Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission every once in a while throughout the year. And then the state gets a little bit of benefit from Fisherman Fund in that you get the interest off our outstanding balance. We have about $11 million in there, and you guys get money from the Giafonte Fund somehow. I'm not quite sure how all that works, but I know it's like 1% interest or something. And the fund is to pay our last resort. So I'm just trying to, my goal on the commission is to preserve it, the condition of the fund, to make sure that balance always, we always have money in there. And we're to pay our last resort. So when a fisherman makes a claim, they have to exhaust other sources of payment, like going through their private insurance or workman's comp or the boat's DNI or whatever. And then once all that's refused, then we step in and help out the fisherman.
Great. How many board members are there on this board?
We have 5 board members. They're from different parts of the state. We have one from Nome, one from Sam, one from Homer, and then myself from Skagway, and then Clay from Ketchikan. And they put us, we have 5 districts. So they put us one person from each district. That way we know the fishermen, because all of us on board, we've all been fishing for a long time. And so when somebody makes the claim, there's a good chance somebody on the board knows who that is.
Great.
And they're 5-year terms, and they're all staggered. So every year there's another appointment that comes up. Every 5 years, there's 5 of us. So next year there'll be somebody else up for reappointment or a new member.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions from this committee? Representative Eastman, do you have any questions?
No, I don't. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Saldi, thank you. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your willingness to once again serve the state of Alaska on this board and the fishermen of the state of Alaska. So thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thank you for the opportunity.
Back on record, the House Special Committee on Fisheries has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees, Bate Putnam and Dale Kelly, to the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission, and Mark Saldi to the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council, and recommends that the names be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. Member signatures do not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation. So we will take a brief at ease in order to sign the report. Back on record, House Special Committee on Fisheries. Up next, we will have House Bill 354, Fishery Assessments, sponsored by Representative Dan Ortiz. Welcome. We didn't think you were going to make it. You must have had your committee canceled. So we have Representative Ortiz and his committee assistant or staff assistant, Liz Harpold. We have also Ken Alper, Director of Tax Division, Department of Revenue, and Morgan Foss, Legislative Liaison, Department of Fish and Game, available for questions. So, You've already joined us, so if you would identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and esteemed members of this committee. For the record, my name is Dan Ortez, District 36 Representative, Southern Southeast Alaska.
Good morning. My name is Liz Harpold, staff for Representative Dan Ortez.
Please, begin.
Madam Chair, House Bill 354 is necessary for the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association, the only dive fishery association in the state regulated by AS 4376-15210, to amend the process undertaken to modify the tax on geoduck, sea cucumber, and sea urchin fisheries it represents. Each fishery, Madam Chair, can tax itself at a different rate. At present, a majority of permit holders are required to change an assessment tax. Many of the permits are non-transferable, and less than half of the CFEC permit holders in these fisheries are actively participating in said fisheries. Due to the low involvement of permit holders, a majority of participation of permit holders is unrealistic. The proposed legislation allows for a change in assessment tax to be initiated by a three-fourths vote from the Board of Directors, and the vote to accept the change pass with a majority of vote of permit holders participating in the vote. I will defer further comment on this particular bill to staff person Liz Harpold, but it's a simple bill, Madam Chair, and it's just allowing the Regional Dive Fisheries Association to permit or to take their votes in a different manner and a more workable manner. And with that said, I will ask that you allow Liz Harpold to further elaborate as to the impact of this bill.
I certainly will, but before we go there, I'd also like to mention we have Alfia's Bullard online from Ledge Legal. So if there's any questions in that capacity, Mr. Bullard's available as well. So please.
Okay. Good morning. Thank you. So I just want to talk a little bit about this bill. SARDFA, the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association, at present is the only regional dive fisheries association in the state that is affected by this legislation. SARDFA is a private nonprofit economic development organization representing the harvest divers, processors, and communities of Southeast Alaska. They're not quite as far north as Yakutat, but for the region south of that. There's at present around 380 permit holders for the dive fisheries, and this association was established back in the late 90s, again, by means through legislation. It's governed by a board of directors, and I'll let Phil Doherty speak to that a bit more in just a bit, but it's a good mix of industry, I can say that much. The fisheries that they oversee, geoduck, sea urchin, sea cucumber, they choose how they wish to tax themselves. It's a self-assessed tax, and they work cooperatively with Fish and Game to develop their annual operating plan, which determines how the dive assessment, that self-imposed tax, will be spent. And, you know, if you have any questions about that, I ask you to direct them to Morgan Foss, who is here. And then this assessment is collected by the Department of Revenue, and the assessment goes to Fish and Game to manage that fishery. At present, the assessment is currently voted on, or is initiated by 25% of the permit holders that voted in the previous election. And then this worked out pretty well back in the 90s, because back then I had just switched to a limited entry fishery, and most of the permit holders were still actively fishing. But since many of those permits have become non-transferable, it means that, you know, since they can't transfer those, sell those, or anything like that, it is the permit holder that actively has to use that permit. They can't even be standing on the boat. Like, they're the ones that are using their hands to do the fishing. And so, you know, 20 years goes by, many of them are no longer participating in the fishery. any diver or dive permit holder in Southeast Alaska belongs to SARDFA. And how we would like to change in this legislation is we would like to have the initiation to change the assessment tax be brought forward by 75% of the board of directors and then voted on in favor by a majority of the ballots received. And the process for going about having this election is outlined in the legislation. We're not trying to change that process, and we still are looking to have the permit holders be the ones that do vote on this assessment and how they are assessed. Thank you.
Thank you. So currently, if there's a vote on anything, it's the vote is determined by 75% of the received ballots?
Through the to the chair for pursuits. For them to initiate the change, they need to have at least 25% of the permit holders who participated in the previous election initiate that change. And then if that election or that change goes to a ballot, they need to have a majority of the permit holders vote on that. And so since about less than half or many of the permit holders are non-transferable, they're not as active in the fisheries anymore, so they're not getting as good response rate out of when they send these ballots out, and so that's become an issue. They're not able to get even half of the permit holders to participate.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Just to provide a little bit more in that area, and the reason would be because while back in the 90s when the organization was first formed, you did have a much higher participation rate in these particular votes, if you will. But now we have much less activity in the industry overall by permit holders because, again, it wasn't a matter of these permit holders simply as they got out of the fishery selling their permit. That wasn't possible. They're just choosing not to participate anymore in the fishery. And so, therefore, it's harder and harder to get to that level of,
gotcha.
Of ratio to of gotcha. Participation in an actual vote.
Gotcha. Thank you. Are there any other questions from this committee? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions. We'll just go back, Representative Ortiz, thank you. We'll go back to your latest comments, what we were just talking about, is ability not to sell these permits. And there's been, I'm assuming there's been no new applications, or what's the process for applying for new applications?
I think Pete could address that.
If you may, if you would allow, Madam Chair, I would allow, I would think we'd be best served answering that question by Mr. Putman, who is here in the room.
Certainly. How handy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Fate Putman for the record, Chair of CFEC designee. This gets to the heart of CFEC and the issue of why there are so many legal cases in the Supreme Court. Because when the fishery is initially limited, we issue permits to fishermen who participated in that fishery and have a history of participating in that fishery, but if they're dependent on that fishery strictly for their economic survival and have a history of doing that, they get a transferable permit. But if they have other sources of income or do other things, they get a non-transferable permit. We make those decisions at CFEC, and of course those are very important decisions to the fishermen and their future and their family. But if they get a non-transferable permit, of course, those are kind of things they want to challenge our decisions through the court system. And I think in this fishery, a lot of these dive fishermen initially that applied for these permits got non-transferables because they had other sources of income and got a non-transferable permit. That answers your question.
Hi. Does it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, it didn't answer my question. Frankly, is I'm trying to figure out why the reason is why we have the problem to start with, and it appears that there's no new applications. I mean, we're having, you have 380 permit holders originally. out of about half of that, about 25% of them normally vote. So 95 people normally vote. About half of that is what you need to pass. So 45 people out of 380 original, or 48 people to get there. But the problem is they don't have enough people that are voting because they're not participating. Why are they not participating? Can't they get permits? Is CFECC the problem that they can't apply for permits? Is no people not trying to get into this? And why?
Sounded like they were aging out.
I know. And why aren't new people trying to go in, Madam Chair? Maybe that's the problem.
Yes, Madam Chair. I think that you're striking on one of the issues. With a non-transferable permit, eventually the people who receive those permits are aged out, or they can't sell them, they can't pass them on. So the number of permits diminish in a fishery because of the non-transferable. So getting new fishers into the system is not possible, because only the permits that are transferable can be moved to another fisherman.
So along that very line then, once the non-transferable permit is no longer fished, it's a goner.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
And there's no avenue to force a new entrant to apply for that permit. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct, Madam
Chair. Okay, gotcha.
And that's your question.
So people can apply for a transferable permit currently?
That is correct. Mr. Newman, through the chair, yes.
Madam Chair, you would think the evolution is they would at least, because they have to have a, if they want to do it for a full-time living and economically, they have to have a permanent permit. You would think that the evolution of this would be somebody trying to get into it to try it, you know, and at least get a temporary. So I'm trying to get, are we even getting people qualifying or asking to try and even get temporary permits? How much interest is there in this?
Right, and I think that's what this bill is trying to address.
I believe that is the case, Madam Chair. Through the bill, and my understanding from speaking with staff, the problem with this situation is that those folks that are no longer participating in the fishery but can maintain their permits by paying their licensing fee every year may not participate in the vote. And right, to have a threshold of 50% plus one in order to change the tax structure becomes a hurdle that cannot be overcome without this legislation, is my understanding.
Thank you, Commissioner Designee.
You're welcome, Madam Chair. Please call me anytime.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from this committee? Seeing none, I do believe there is public testimony, so I will open up public testimony on House Bill 354. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing no one, we do have Philip Dougherty online from the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries. Mr. Dougherty?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you very much. I'm calling from the Ketchikan office here. My name is Phil Dougherty. I live in Ketchikan, Alaska, and I am the Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association. We were the ones that approached Representative Ortiz to try and help us clean up or change an old regulation that was on the books that, as you've heard, pertains to the way we can change our assessment tax. When the Dive Association was formed in 1997, the reason behind it was because the Fish and Game Department did not have any funds at that time to do the proper management assessment and research on the three species that we harvest, and that's sea urchins, Guida clams, and sea cucumbers. So the divers who realized that there was a resource in Southeast Alaska worth harvesting based on what was happening in British Columbia, Washington State, and California, went to the legislature through Senator Bill Williams at the time and got the association formed, and the basis of the association is a mandatory assessment tax. We could tax them, the divers could tax themselves, again, as part of the enabling legislation at 1%, 3%, 5%, and 7%. currently the sea cucumber fishery, which is really the focus of what this bill is about, is taxing itself at 5%. The gooey duck fishery taxes itself at 7%, and the urchin fishery at 5%. And that's a vessel value. So when you a fisherman comes to the dock with his catch of the day, right on the fish ticket, 5% for the sea cucumber fishery is taken off, just like a state tax. And in the meantime, they're also being taxed at the 3% level, which is a state fisheries tax. So this assessment money above and beyond the 3% state assessment tax goes into our coffers at the end of the year. And then we sit down with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. We develop on an annual basis what's called the annual operating plan. The department comes to us and gives us what their plans are for the year in terms of assessment, management, and research needs. We discuss it if necessary, but we pretty much come to an agreement at the end of the given year, and we give the Alaska Department of Fish and Game the money that they need to conduct these fisheries. So that's the assessment tax, and that's why it's in there to begin with. The hurdle that has, and you've talked about it a little bit here, that has become difficult for us to get over is because of the number of non-transferable permits that are out there, and even some of the transferable permits. And I'll give you an example. In the sea cucumber fishery, there are 156 transferable permits and 233 non-transferable permits for 389 total permits. When we had an election to change the assessment tax in the cucumber fishery from 5% to 1% 2 years ago, we could not get half of the 389 permit holders to vote. And therefore, even though all the active permit holders and those involved in the association wanted to get changed, we couldn't clear that hurdle. So what we are asking through this legislation is that we would just like a majority vote of the ballots that we receive to carry the day. And that's really the thrust of this proposal here. It affects no one else in the state. It does not affect the state of Alaska. We have a commitment to pay the Alaska Department of Fish and Game the money that they need to manage and research the fisheries. We also pay a lot of money toward in the gooey duck fishery. We pay a lot of money toward paralytic shellfish poisoning and water quality testing through the Department of Environmental Conservation, and we will continue to meet those requirements. Obviously, if we don't pay the state what they need to conduct their management, we don't have a fisheries, and we understand that. Fortunately, in the sea cucumber fishery, the prices have been very good the last several years, and we don't have a large overhead within the association for sea cucumbers. We have been working for the last 10 years with the Alatec shellfish hatchery. We've been doing some enhancement work for the sea cucumbers. We have some other programs that we're doing for sea cucumbers. But we have a rather full bank account for a fishery like this, and I'll guarantee you 10, 15, 20 years ago, these fishermen did not know that they were going to have enough money in the bank to pay for the Fish and Game Department for several years without even being taxed. So if you can lower the tax from 5% to, say, 1% in the sea cucumber fishery, and you look at the annual wages that the divers are getting, a diver would realize somewhere between $1,200 and $1,500 more for his ex-vessel value at the end of the year if you were to pay a 1% tax versus a 5% tax. So what we're asking is just to make it to streamline the assessment tax and make it a little bit easier for us to make the change. And again, it affects no one else in the state. It does not affect any money going to the state, and our commitment to the state to pay all of our bills is always there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Crest-Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Mr. Doherty, for your testimony. This looks like a good bill. I was curious in reading the legislation, noting, I mean, the very unique status that dive fisheries have in Alaska, the system under which they were set up, prompted me to look at one of the original authorizing statutes, which I'm guessing was from former Representative Bill Williams, as noted previously. And so in 1642-40, Regional Dive Fishery Development Associations lays out what they would be, which obviously SARDFA is that organization. But I was curious, on page 3, line 14, board members of the Qualified Regional Dive Fishery Development Association, and I'm interested in, especially reading the original authorizing statutes for regional dive fishery associations, if multiple dive fishery associations could form for the same dive fishery. And I ask because there's a scenario fishermen are not unknown to quabble or debate among themselves. And if that scenario could exist, and Phil, I know you probably know this better than anyone, so if you could speak to that, if there's a hypothetical scenario, 5 years, if there's a disagreement among dive fishermen, if a rival dive fishery association could rise up and also submit petitions to the commissioner that might be very different than the petition that SARDFA might submit.
Madam Chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, that's one scenario that I've never been asked or dealt with, whether you could have another dive association within Southeast Alaska competing on the same animals. I do not believe that that would be allowed to happen, and I don't see why that would be allowed to happen. The only other dive fisheries in the state, if you want to look outside of Southeast Alaska, whether there's another possibility of another dive association being formed, there's a very small sea cucumber fishery up in Kodiak, and really that's the and I've talked to them several times about them forming an association, but they just don't see the need to do that right now. But in terms of Southeast, I do not see that scenario happening.
Thank you, Phil. I agree. Presently, there isn't any debate. There's no squabbling among dive fishermen, and of course, it'd be completely redundant. But I'm interested, technically and legally, whether that's possible. And in reading 1642-40, I don't see any reason why it's not. And again, name any fishery in Alaska, the Bristol Bay. There's lots of debates over to permit stack or to not to permit stack. If there was ever a dispute that arose in the future, that would lead to seven other fishermen saying, you know, SARDFA, we're going to agree to disagree and we're going to form our own group. The three criteria laid out in 1642-40 are not that hard to meet. So I'm wondering if there's anything that prevents that, and maybe someone from the department or drag fate or Dale back up.
I guess my question would be, Representative Chris Tompkins, I'm not sure what the concern is.
The question is there anything that prevents a group of dissatisfied fishermen from forming a nonprofit corporation?
I understand that.
And submitting a petition.
So what would be the difference if another group did form?
Madam Chair, what seems conceivable is one group might have an opinion on what the preferred enhancement tax might be, and another group might have a different opinion, and so they could each submit different petitions. But really, my question is, I just like to learn more about regional dive fisheries associations and whether there's something that allows only one to exist.
Well, I guess I'm trying to relate it to this particular document, and so maybe that's another conversation outside of this document.
Madam Chair, page 3, line 14.
Well, I see that, but I don't see where it says SARDFA, in where it refers directly to this particular dive association. It says members of the Qualified Regional Dive Fishery Development Association.
Right. So, Madam Chair, my question as it relates to this legislation would be, what is the qualified regional dive fishery association as opposed to a regional qualified dive fishery association?
Now, that would might be a little more direct, and maybe we should have the sponsor come up and respond to that. Maybe we should have somebody from the CFEC come up.
Yeah, absolutely. Whoever can.
I don't know who the response is, and I guess I'm trying to relate it to this, and to me it looks like it's looking for an issue where there isn't an issue, but that might not be the case. So, Representative Ortiz, do you have any kind of response?
I guess I can't speak.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Excuse me. Liz Harpold, staff for Rep. Ortiz, through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins. I can't address the issue of if this could happen, if another regional dive fishery could form, but these rules apply to any regional dive fishery that forms. So if they did form another regional dive fishery, these rules would apply to them. And they would work, I would assume, similar to how this regional dive fishery currently works with Fish and Game to establish assessment projects. So whatever it pertained to their region, that would be my understanding of how that works. Again, I'm sorry, I can't answer the hypothetical of.
Was that Mr. Doherty? Or?
Do you have a response, Mr. Doherty?
Madam Chair, I'm sitting here again thinking of that scenario, and I've never heard of anyone in Southeast amongst the divers even contemplating that. Just to give you a real quick, we're run by a board of directors. There's 9 board of directors. They are representative of cities and areas in Southeast Alaska. There's also one representing out-of-state divers. There's one representing the processor. And we also have a seat that's classified as a municipality seat. So we have a fairly wide-ranging representation. And within the organization, we also have 3 committees, the Sea Cucumber Committee, the Gooey Duck Committee, and the Red Sea Urchin Committee. And with the exception of the Red Sea Urchin Committee, there are 2 big fisheries, the Gooey Duck Committee and the Sea Cucumber Fishery, have approximately 20 divers on board those committees. So again, a fairly robust committee system, and I think they take in and the committees are open to any the public and divers, and I think we've had some fairly robust debates over the years about how we move forward on different proposals, but we've never had it come to the point where anyone has even mentioned breaking away and having 2 associations. That's all I can answer on that. I'm not a lawyer to pick apart the legislation, but it certainly has never reared its head here in the Southeast. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Chris Tompkins.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, I'd like to think I should be able to ask questions about the underlying structure of Regional Dive Fishery Association. So I just want to clarify. I'm just trying to learn and understand what the what is a regional dive fishery association is, and if there's anything that prevents multiple from being formed, regardless of how unlikely the scenario. So that is the origin of my question. It sounds as though, and no one in the room is volunteering or speaking otherwise, that that is possible. I think we all agree it's highly unlikely. That's great. Just wanted to understand that, or if someone can disabuse me of this understanding of the statutes. No further questions.
Is Alpheus online? Is he online? Maybe we could call him back. Would you?
And I don't actually think this really merits. We don't need to further pursue it.
We just want to make sure that you're satisfied, and I understand your intent and your direction in this. And if I implied anything less than, I did not intend to.
No problem. Yeah, just it's a great bill. But this being the Gruenberger, I'm like to note when there's an A and when there's a the, and sometimes there's a difference, even though in this case probably not much in practical terms.
Are there any other questions or comments? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think what my neighbor's trying to do, and it's what I'm trying to do when I'm looking at this bill, is when we have this in front of us, is how can we maybe make this better or help solve
Certainly.
The problem that we have here and use the discovery process that we have here the knowledge to work on this. But I do have a question. I appreciate Phil, the gentleman that's online, and I don't want to keep him online. It was a great explanation of what we said, but I think what I heard, sir, was that the intent was to change of this bill to go from 5% to 1% for sea cucumbers on a tax on that, but not change it for gooey duck and urchin?
Madam Chair, nothing has happened yet because the bill hasn't gone through. Assuming the bill goes through and we have another vote to change our assessment tax, yet the vote will be in the sea cucumber fishery. We do not anticipate changing the assessment tax in the gooey duck fishery. The gooey duck fishery is a very expensive fishery for us. We pay between our paralytic shellfish poisoning, our water quality testing, and now because of some problems over in China where the gooey ducks are mostly headed, we have to test for arsenic in our gooey duck clams. We spend between of our SARFTA money and the gooey duck divers money between $150,000 and $200,000 a year to pay for our program, and that's on top of the $50,000 we pay to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So the gooey duck fishery barely makes its own, hangs in there and has a surplus at the end of the year. Matter of fact, in a couple of years, we've had less than a surplus, but we still manage to get by. In the sea cucumber fishery, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, those big ticket items, with the exception of what we pay the Fish and Game Department, and we pay the Fish and Game Department approximately $80,000 a year, plus we do other things, plus these fisheries pay for the administration of the association itself. But there's enough money in the bank right now that the sea cucumber fishermen feel that they can lower their assessment tax. It would I don't want to say for sure it could go to 3%, but I would guess right now you'd be looking at something around, you'd be looking at 1%.
Follow-up, Representative Newman.
Thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair. And Phil, does the Gooey Duck Association, the Urchin Association, the Sea Cucumbers, you're all part of this Fisheries Dive Fisheries is a group, but I'm assuming that your voting lines don't cross, and that's part of the problem is you don't have enough members? Or can somebody who's part of the Gooey Duck Association vote for sea urchins? Are the changes in the tax assessments on that because they're also part of the dive fishery?
Madam Chair, Representative Newman, no, if there's going to be a change in the sea cucumber assessment tax, the only members that can vote are the sea cucumber permit holders through CFEC. And again, the problem goes back to there were so many non-transferable permits given out at the beginning of these fisheries because the sea cucumber fishery was, of all the dive fisheries, was probably the easiest to make some landings and get at least a non-transferable permit. But we have so many non-transferable permits out there, when we tried to get a majority vote, as I said before, it's difficult. When we had our election 2 years ago, we got 89 positive votes. That's to lower your tax. And the other people either just renew their permits and don't dive, or there's empathy, but there's no reason for us to keep in the cucumber fishery the assessment at 5%, and we're just trying to work around and modernize in the situation that we are today, to make it easier for the divers to change their assessment. And just one other thing, if I might, this fishery here, it's a dive fisheries. It's a very physically demanding fisheries, and the permit holder is the diver. So you can't have the permit holder on the boat and then the permit holder go gets a young person to do the diving. The permit holder has to be in the water. So especially in the non-transferables, as they get older, they don't dive anymore. But they do, for a very small amount of money through CFEC, renew their permit for one reason or another. Madam Chair, thank you.
One more follow-up. Representative Chair, and thank you for the opportunity, Phil. So, Phil, is there not an opportunity where we could take non-transferable permits and change that statute so that they were transferable so that you could get these back into the market? Why aren't we looking at that?
Representative Newman, I think that's a CFEC question. I would.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you.
You're probably right.
Thank you. So, are there any other questions? Is there anyone here who would like to testify on this? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. No further comments from this committee?
I have a comment.
Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
Sounds like a great bill, and especially with the, I guess, proverbial grain of the fleet since the fishery was created. Well, grain of the dive fleet. I've never quite known if I've always gotten a little bit caught up with dive fishermen and fishing because it doesn't really jive with my sort of imagery of fishing, but very much is. So thank you for moving it forward.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the department, if I could.
Department of CFEC? Fish and Game. Oh, Fish and Game? Please. We do. We have Scott Kelly online. Mr. Kelly?
Madam Chairman.
Thank you. If you could identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, we have a question for you.
Yeah. This is Scott Kelly. I'm the Director of Commercial Fisheries Division.
Well, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, Scott. Representative Newman here. Scott, does if they change the assessment from 5% to 1%, statutorily, these entities are required to cover their costs of the department. Does this still cover the cost of the department if they decrease the tax assessment?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, yes. And I would say that we work closely with the Dive Fishery Association, and they're well aware that if we don't have funds to assess, they don't fish. So, again, they're very motivated to make sure we continue to get the funding. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Seeing no other questions or comments from this committee, I would like to note that this bill has a zero fiscal note and a further referral to the Resources Committee. So I would look to the will of the committee, but I would like to move this bill out today. And if there are no objections, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 354, LS1368-D, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you. With that, we will move House Bill 354 from committee. And I will take a brief at ease. Back on record, a special fisheries committee. Next up, we have House Bill 379, Commercial Fishermen's Fund Vessel Owner Claims, also sponsored by Representative Ortiz. We also have Representative Ortiz's staff, Liz Harpoon, here to help with presentation of this bill. Available for questions, we have, let me double check and make sure they are here. Here we go. We have I don't see Velma Thomas. We have Alpheus Bullard. Is she? Oh, there we go. We have Velma Thomas, Program Coordinator, Labor and Workforce Development. Marie Marks, I saw here, Director of Workman's Comp, Labor and Workforce Development. So, we also have Alpheus Bullard, who is not available. I see. So, if you would state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dan Ortiz. I represent District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska.
And my name is Liz Harpold, staff to Representative Dan Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and esteemed members of this committee for bringing forward House Bill 379 to this committee. Madam Chair, in 2010, the legislature amended the Fisherman's Fund statute to allow a vessel owner to receive 50% of the owner's protection indemnity insurance deductible from the fund in cases where an injured crew member made a claim against the fund and against the P&I policy. The intent of this amendment was to encourage vessel owners to obtain P&I insurance to fully cover crew member medical expenses in the event of an injury and to reduce the financial burden onto the state. House Bill 379, Madam Chair, will allow an owner to fully recover the P&I deductible from the fund up to an amount of $5,000. This would provide further financial incentive for vessel owners to obtain P&I insurance and to fully cover crew members in the event of an injury or illness at sea. Again, this is a simple bill. It was brought forward at the behest of the folks that it most will impact, and it's got support from the industry. It's got support from individual fishermen. It's just something that is more or less a step to allow them to further pursue insurance and protection out there in the dangerous fisheries that often exist. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ortiz, I don't know anything about the fund. We haven't heard any information what the fund is, how it's managed. Could you kind of explain that and kind of the questions I kind of have towards that while we're doing that, so we kind of incorporate it into one question here. If you could, is just how the claims are approved. So somebody puts in there, is a board that approves them? Is it doctors that approve them? How much money is in the fund? Is it an enterprise account where it's interest earning, bad markets, all that stuff? That's what these funds do.
Through the chair, surely Representative, you have a good question there. And I'm going to defer to staff member Liz Harpold to answer that particular question.
For the record, this is Liz Harpold through the chair, Representative Newman. Fisherman's Fund predates Alaska statehood. It was established in 1951 to provide the treatment and care of Alaska licensed commercial fishermen who have been injured while fishing onshore or offshore in Alaska. The benefits from the fund are financed from revenue received from each resident and non-resident commercial fishermen's license and permit fees. 39% by the state from all commercial fishing licenses, but not to exceed $50 for each license holder for each year. The Commissioner of Labor and Workforce Development oversees the administration of the program with the assistance of the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council. For example, we heard from Mark Saldi earlier. He is somebody who participates on that board. The council is composed of the commissioner or his designee, who serves as the chairman, and 5 members appointed by the governor. In the Fisherman's Fund statute, 23.35, it outlines the benefits that a fisherman can claim and the process that they need to go through for filing for those. Any questions about the technical aspects of the process? I'd like to defer to the Department of Labor and Workforce, who helps coordinate this fund, if I may. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sheriff, we could ask that.
Certainly. We have Marie here. Ms. Marks, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Marie Marks, I'm the Director of the Division of Workers' Compensation, and one of the programs is the Fish Fund program that we administer. Through the Chair, Representative Newman, if I recalled your question correctly, it was what benefits are available to fishermen under the Fisherman's Fund, is that correct?
Well, if I may, Madam Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ma'am, some of my question was kind of the structure of the fund. Is it like an enterprise type of fund that's, a lot of these types of insurance fund or an enterprise fund where they're invested, expected to make a certain amount of money, goes back into the fund, from the money that's already there out of the corpus. I don't know if it's Let's just start if it's that type of fund. Is it an enterprise type of fund?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, it is a dedicated, completely self-sustaining fund. So the amount of money that is collected is sufficient to run the fund program and pay for the benefits available through the fund.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Femi?
Follow up?
So generally, where does the where do you try and keep this fund balance at? Because you got different fluctuations in the amount of fishermen, medical costs continue to go up, and with medical costs continuing to go up like this, in taking the double amount of money out of the fund, how does that affect it when you stay at a 39% tax?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, the amount increase is shown in the fiscal note. Is and I want to get this right because I don't want to misstate that. Is $18,900. So it's $18,900. It's not a huge increase compared to the amount of benefits paid. The reason is this reimburses vessel owners up to $5,000. The majority of claims are paid to fishermen, and that is not changed by this bill. The only thing being changed, the only thing here, is to allow a vessel owner to be reimbursed more of their deductible, but still a $5,000 limit.
And that would be to incentivize them to carry this P&I insurance, the vessel owners, knowing they're going to get their deductible back.
Madam Chair, that's absolutely correct.
Correct. Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that was just kind of my question, because we got same amount of fishermen, but they're going to be able to get twice as much. That vessel owner, if there's an accident, will be able to claim up to $5,000 to the amount of an accident there.
No. What this does is, if a vessel owner doesn't have P&I insurance, then they go to the fisherman's fund, and the fisherman fund pays. This is an encouragement to say to vessel owners, if you carry your insurance, if you carry P&I insurance, and your deductible is $5,000 when you have an injured crewman. Currently, we only give you back $2,500 of your deductible that you have to pay. Now we're going to give you back your whole $5,000. So it encourages the vessel owners to carry that P&I insurance because it reduces the amount of money out of the vessel owner's pocket.
I understand, Madam.
Okay.
My question was, is the fund balanced? So if you're increasing the amount of money that they can get back out of the fund, is there an increase in the tax to cover that cost? Or if you're staying at 39% of what it costs to get the vessel's permit, is that changed? Or if it stays at 39 and the fund's here and they're taking as much money out, half of that now, if you're taking twice as much money out, that's my question.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, there is sufficient revenue to cover the increased liability. The revenue is about $1.4 million each year.
Wow. Maybe they should be reducing the tax on it, too.
That could be another conversation, Representative Newman.
Well, that's what I was trying to get to, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I mean, while we're working on this stuff, if they're collecting excess funds like that, maybe they should be taking a look at that while we're looking at this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Marks. We do have invited testimony, and we have on Bob Kehoe, who is the Executive Director for the Purseine Vessel Owners Association. And we also have invited testimony from Mark Saldi, the Fisherman's Fund Advisory Appeals Council. Oh, well, we only have one because Mark is no longer there, but we do have Bob Kehoe. Mr. Kehoe, are you available, please?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
If you would state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, my name is Bob Kehoe, and I am the Executive Director of the Purseine Vessel Owners Association.
Thank you, and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. PSVOA fully supports House Bill 379. Some of the discussion prior to my testimony touched on some of the things I was going to talk about, but I'll just go ahead and launch into it. The bill expands on the legislature's effort in 2010 to provide a financial incentive to vessel owners to obtain insurance to fully cover their crew members in the event of an injury. a small independent business owners, the cost of liability insurance is a major fixed cost. This bill will ease the financial burden on vessel owners in paying for the cost of insurance, and will also further promote the goal of ensuring all of the medical needs of injured crew members are satisfied. And so at this time, PSCOA respectfully requests that the committee support the bill and move it forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kehoe. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we appreciate you taking the time to testify.
My pleasure.
We have no other invited testimony, so at this point I will, with seeing no more questions from the committee, I will open up public testimony. And we do have public testimony, and I believe here we have Mr. Mark Vinsel. Mr. Vinsel, if you'd state your name and affiliation, please, and begin your testimony.
Yes, Madam Chair. I am Mark Vinsel, Executive Administrator at United Fishermen of Alaska. I'm standing in for UFA Executive Director Francis Leach and President Jerry McCune, who are both at the Statewide Board of Fisheries meeting. United Fishermen of Alaska reviewed HB 379 at our board meeting last week, and the board voted to support passage of HB 379. All fishermen are very interested in the Fisherman's Fund. It is sort of the equivalent of the Workman's Comp, which they're not really eligible for. We are most important, as the conversation has included, is the solvency of the fund, and so we've been over the years. If you go back to 2009, 2010, at that time, UFA supported increasing the maximum claim limit from 100 to ultimately the legislature changed it to 10,000. At that time, this concept was discussed, but it was important to see over time how the fund would hold up and make sure that it was solvent. I think the people in support of this have been patient in waiting that, and really, according to the people who administer the fund, it's appropriate to do this at this time. UFA supports and encourages your support for the bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Vinsel? Seeing none, Mr. Vinsel, we thank you very much for your testimony. And also online, we have Clay Besnick. Mr. Besnick?
Yeah, hello there, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If you'd identify yourself and your affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and rest of the members of the committee there. My name's Clay Besnick. I'm the ranking member. I'm from Ketchikan. I'm the ranking member on the Fisherman's Fund Appeals and Advisory Council. I got appointed by Governor Palin a few years ago, and I've been on the board ever since. And the shepherding of the Fisherman's Fund is a pretty intense responsibility that everybody that's on the appeals board takes real seriously. So this, I'm not going to repeat what Mark Vinsel just said, but that everything he said was true. I was on the board when we crafted the change to $10,000 because medical costs are not going down. So we wanted to stay with the times. And then also we are pretty adamant about, since the Fisherman's Fund is a fund of last resort, there are some people that use it for their first insurance, and we've been striving for responsibility from fishermen in the state, and House 379 bill here is going to fix the loophole that fishermen have found themselves in, and it's a great thing. So I support it fully. I can't speak for the board because we've not had a chance to bring it up, but I'm fairly certain we're going to have unanimous support for this concept here. So, and as far as what Representative Newman said earlier, the words that were said were very clear. This fund was started before statehood, so if we need something from the state, we'll be sure to let you guys know.
Thank you, Mr. Besnick. Are there any questions from this committee? Seeing none, thank you, and thank you for taking your time to testify.
You bet. Thank you.
Is there anyone else here in the room that would like to testify on this bill? And I see no one else online, so I'm going to close public testimony. Are there any comments from this committee? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly support our commercial fishermen and the issues that they have to face and medical costs that are going up, and I certainly understand the danger. I work in a lot of industry where there's a lot of danger myself. My question in all this is, you know, I'm concerned that we have $1.4 million sitting in a fund in state government that should be out in these fishermen's pockets, because they don't have a lot of extra cash right now. And I'll probably just put an amend on moving this bill out, because I'd like to take as this goes through the process, to maybe take a look and see what is the accurate tax that should be put on there. Because I know when I talk to these fishermen, their biggest complaint is the amount of government that they have to deal with. You know, license, cost of license and permits and stuff is extremely high, and it's a big cost for them. So if there's an opportunity here where we could assist them fishermen and being a little more equitable with this fund, I'd rather see that money in the fisherman's pocket than in the state. Support the cause, support the effort, but I just wanted to explain my goals here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? I think that this bill will assist the fishermen in reducing their costs overall and helping with their insurance situation, and it will also promote carrying insurance on behalf of their fishermen. So I'm really supportive of this. Representative Eastman, do you have any comments? Oh, not there. Apparently he's not there. Representative Tarr? I would have a motion. Excuse me, just one moment. I'm going to take a brief recess. Well, and if there's no other comments, I would like to move this bill out. And I'd like to make a note that this bill does have a fiscal note with an estimated impact of $18,900 per year on the fund. But from the testimony we've heard, the fund will remain solvent. This bill will always also encourage more people to carry insurance and may actually be cost-saving to the fund in the long term due to reduced claims against the fund. The bill has a further referral to Labor and Commerce, and I would look towards the will of the committee insofar as moving it out. And if I hear no objection, I'd like to hear a motion, please.
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 379, that's LS1464-A, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
With that, we will move House Bill 379 out of committee. You have a good point, Mark.
If it has a fiscal note, how come it's not got a finance committee?
I don't know. Maybe because the fund is so solvent.
A lot of times, if you come up after the first,
I thought you said it did have a.
Okay, hold on. We're still on. Did I go off record?
No.
We're still on record. Yeah. So. I will announce the schedule for next week by the end of the day, but there is a very good possibility that we will not be meeting next week because we are going to be putting a lot of time into House Bill 199, and we need some time to address that. The following week, we will be having a presentation by the Department of Fish and Game regarding pike as an invasive species in Alaska and their predation on salmon smolt. So, I am hoping we will also be able to have a presentation on the first CS of 199, depending on how our workload goes. But with that, I really want to thank the committee members today. I appreciate it. I appreciate you, your time, your participation, and we will adjourn at 11:30.